Hi, this is Carl Polichuk, and I am very pleased to interview today Mr. Andrew Rogerson. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Cal. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Andrew is the author of 4 books, and he is he's so certified, I can't even name all the certifications, but he is a certified business intermediary, which is to say a business broker, and he helps companies buy and sell businesses, make sure that they have the right value for their business, and make sure that, in fact, that there's a fit between themselves and the business that they're looking to buy. So, Andrew, thank you for joining us. Why don't you give us a little bit more about your background? I know that you've been in Sacramento for quite a while, but it sounds like you might not have started out here.
Well, that's true. Originally, I'm from Australia and came to California about 20 years ago. And I worked for New Zealand government in Los Angeles as a diplomat. Had a couple of years in L.A., went back to Australia and ran a business for 6 years, sold the business and then decided to come back to California. And we came back about 14 years ago, bought a business in Los Angeles and sold that business and did well from that and moved up to Sacramento and been here for about the last 10 years.
Very good. So you've bought and sold several businesses yourself, and then you worked your way into being a broker, I guess, a business consultant. And so you've helped other people buy and sell their businesses.
Yes, it's small businesses, something I enjoy doing. I've owned 5 businesses, 2 in Australia and now 3 in California. And I just enjoy the whole small business dynamic. It can be a stressful time for business owners. And with the things I've done and the work I do as a business broker, I really enjoy helping a business owner or somebody looking at getting into business, a new business owner, go through the process and make sure we put down some strong foundations. So if they're selling, we make sure we analyze the business correctly and do a proper valuation. And it's my role, if I'm representing the owner of the business, to handle all the negotiations and all the paperwork in the transaction. So when the seller passes or transfers the title across to the buyer, everything's done correctly and there's no loose ends. And it's the same process applies when somebody buys a business. Just want to make sure everything's done properly and help them with negotiations and all the legalities you can and just the full gamut of doing things.
Right. Now, when I buy a house, there's all this paperwork. It's like an inch thick. But all of those forms are pre-approved and organized and, you know, I really sort of feel safe, even though I'm spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, that I don't have to necessarily have all that reviewed by an attorney or get an outside assistant. Is that not the case when I buy and sell a business?
No, that's the same situation. As a business broker, a certified business broker, I'm a member of 2 associations. One is the International Business Brokers Association, and one is the California Association of Business Brokers. And these organizations, through the work we've been doing over the years, we've put together the legal forms so that we have the forms determined. Just like a residential real estate agent, all the forms have been worked out, and we use those forms, and it's a standard process we use. Notwithstanding, if we get to a situation where it's different, we know we need to bring in an attorney, that's what we'll do. We want things done properly. We don't want any loose ends out there or any disputes. So that's our responsibility in the transaction to make sure these things are done correctly.
Very nice. So all in all, you've put together, 4 books, and they are Successfully Buy Your Business, Successfully Sell Your Business, Successfully Start Your Business, and Successfully Buy Your Franchise. So why do we need 4 books? I mean, obviously buying versus selling, I can see that, but buying a franchise versus buying a business, is there a difference?
Well, the logic was, and as you said, the logic is real simple. The selling a business is only one process. If you own a business and want to get out, you have to sell the business, and that's the reason for the first book, which is the one I wrote first. The 3 books, they're really designed for different new business owners or entrepreneurs coming into the market. They've essentially got 3 choices. They can buy an existing business, they can start their own business, or they can buy the rights to a franchise. And so that's the reason I wrote the 3 books. I wanted to cover the 3 variables, and my goal was to educate the buyer so that they know the process and what's involved in each of the 3 different options and the risks involved, because essentially the book is about risks and explaining the different risks so that the new entrepreneur knows what risk they're taking on and considers all those variables as they make their decision.
All righty. And so the book on Successfully Buy Your Franchise, Is this for people going into a new franchise or taking over an existing franchise?
Yeah, it's a good question, Carl. The answer is it's for a person considering buying a new franchise. If somebody was to buy an existing business that is currently a franchise, that's all explained in the Successfully Buy Your Business book. But there are franchise opportunities that come onto the market all the time, and franchising, it's a great way of doing business in America. The International Franchise Association says that about 46% of all businesses is transacted through franchises. So there is an enormous amount of business going through franchises, and that's the reason of that matchup. Special things to be aware of. It's a different process to buy an existing business. So again, I really wanted to educate the franchise buyer on what's involved and how to do the process successfully.
All righty. And, you know, it just seems scary to me if I were going to buy a business, any kind of business, whether it was a franchise or not, I would be worried, how do I know that it's going to be profitable once I take it over? You know, is there some way that you can address that?
Well, it's definitely a good question. And again, as I was saying before, a lot of the decisions when you become a new entrepreneur, it's about managing your risk and your appetite for risk. And some people prefer to buy an existing business because there's processes and customers and suppliers and everything in place. And that is definitely the main reason that people go into buying an existing business. But for some people, they like the idea of doing it their own way. They come from corporate America, for example, with a strong background in one particular skill set. It could be in sales and marketing, or it could be in management. And they like to use that skill set, and there's a new trend coming to the market. And so the franchisor has built the processes, and the franchise buyer feels comfortable with what the franchise does. And so they're ready to take their energy and their capital and put it to work in the franchise business model, which provides some structure that an existing business or a small business may not have. So there's different test points and different things are important to different buyers as they work through their processes.
And you've worked primarily with small businesses.
Yeah, my typical business is anything with sales from, you know, $250 up to $10, $20 million. I try to keep my skills in that range because once you get into a business that's got sales above, you know, $10, $20 million, the dynamic of that business changes and becomes a much longer term and much more involved process to sell that business. So I keep myself in the $250 to $10 million gross sales. There's a special skill set required for that, and that's where my skill set fits in.
So I'm surprised at the low end. There are businesses bought and sold for $250,000?
Yes. The average sale of a small business in America is about $300,000. That's the average purchase price.
Hmm.
That's the common point that most new business owners can afford to get in and buy a business with the loans and the capital requirements to get a...
Never occurred to me that a business was saleable at that small, you know, that end of the market. Now, currently, and we're recording this in mid-2009, what is the market like? Because it seems to me like everything else I can guess, you know, in terms of the pressures on somebody who's building a house or has a painting business or is fixing something up or providing a service. But for buying and selling businesses, is it a good time to buy and sell, or is it a bad time to buy and sell? Or
it's an interesting question, and you're right to date this, you know, middle of June 2009. If you asked me this a month ago, I would have said that it's been a very difficult time since September last year. The economy really fell off locally here in California, and what happened was that sellers' expectations were high. Buyers' expectations have become low. They're looking at buying things right now at a discount. But the other variable is that a lot of buyers no longer have equity in their home to use to provide down payment to buy a business. And the banks haven't been lending. So since September last year, September 2008, it's been difficult. But the last month, I've seen things turning around. I'm now working on 6 transactions with different buyers, and they've all come to me in the last month. And there's a change in feeling, and I can see the shift in perception and mindset of business buyers. So for me, it's exciting because the market's now starting to return to normal, and we're getting more engaged with buyers, which is great.
Well, that is good news. Good news for everybody, I guess.
Yes.
So let's say that we find a business and we've somehow figured out its value. Now, its value isn't directly related to the revenue, correct? Like $300,000.
A function of the profitability of the business or the cash flow. If a buyer wants to buy a business and they need a loan, they'll go and talk to a lender, and most of the lending is done by an SBA lender. But the lender looks at the cash flow. How much cash flow is the business throwing off that allows the buyer of the business to support his lifestyle with his family and his mortgage and his responsibilities, plus how much is then available to service debt, and how much do we need to keep in as a buffer just in case things don't go as well as everyone planned. So there's some real logic behind the numbers, and it's really a function of profitability or the cash flow or the discretionary earnings of the business.
So it's not a simple thing where I can put in earnings times 1.8% or anything like that.
The earnings are a talking point, but with different price pressures in different industries, a business with $1 million in sales, that may have a net profit of $100,000, or it could have a $200,000 profit, depending on the industry it's working in and the skill set of the operator of the business. So revenue is nice, but the bottom line is it's the cash flow. It's the discretionary earnings that the business is throwing off that the bank wants to know in order to look at financing a business, and the buyer wants to know in terms of financing his lifestyle.
And how much does the bank matter? I mean, obviously, they're going to lend the money, but if you and I come to terms, one of us is going to buy and one of us is going to sell, and we agree, can the bank throw a wrench into that works?
Yes, it depends on the transaction, but some owners of business, some sellers, they're really reluctant to carry any finance because they've been running this business for 30, 40 years, and now they're retiring. They're really looking at reducing their risk, so they're comfortable selling the business to a buyer, but their preference is not to fund the purchase. They want to get out and transfer that risk to the buyer, and they're happy to transfer the risk to a bank, and the bank's okay taking that risk as long as everything adds up and makes sure things.
Right. So let's take a step back and deal with one book separate from the others, and that is the Successfully Start Your Business, because it's not about buying or selling. So this is a book about, from the ground up, successfully starting your business. And how did you come to write that book?
Well, I really wrote that book based on a lot of the work I do as a business broker. I'm in a unique situation where I get to look under the hood of a business, and I can see profit and loss statements and tax returns and list of fixtures, furniture, and equipment. I get to really look and get a feel for the business and how it's performing. And so I learn a lot, and I see a lot from the work I do as a business broker. So I try to take those experiences, and I get to see a lot of businesses that aren't sellable. And so I've tried to pull those experiences together to write about them in the book, in all the books, in fact, but more so in the Successfully Start Your Business book, because I think it's one of the hardest things to do is to start a new business from scratch because you have no reference point. And so I've tried to cover those talking points in the book, things like making a business plan, how to get finance and what you would need to qualify for finance. So those are some of the things that I've talked about in that book.
So do most people who start businesses just kind of one day hang up a shingle? And I mean,
that's
been my experience.
Well, that's the thing I talk about in the book, and in all the books, in fact. For somebody that's thinking of going to business, one of the first things I suggest they do is take a personal inventory. And what I'd like them to do is to look at their life, where they are in their life right now, and where they're going in their life. Because owning a business does change that dynamic. And for a family guy with two young children, his view of the world would be different to somebody that's got teenage children, or for somebody that's empty nester and wants to buy a business because it's always something he wanted to do. We go through life with different situations, and so looking at our life and where we want to be and what a business will mean to it, that's an important thing that I talk about in the books, and that's really one of the starting places is to do that.
Okay, well, now we look at this, Successfully Start Your Business. It's 184 pages, and there's a lot of checklists, and then I guess what you'd say, checklists explained. Is that a format that you picked because people coming to this project are kind of in the mood to get out a pencil and figure things out?
Well, one of the reasons I chose that format is that I'm trying to encourage people to think. I really want people to go through their own personal processes to work out what's important to them. And I felt checklists did that because there's a talking point there in the terms of a checklist item, and I want people to reflect on that, how important it is to them, because different people have different risk ratios and different skill sets and different experiences. And they need to relate to those things as it relates to their individual situation. So what may be uncomfortable for one person is perfectly comfortable for another person. So that's the basis of the checklist. Let's put some things in front of the reader of the book and have them go through their thought processes and perhaps consider something that they hadn't thought of and think, oh, okay, I hadn't considered that, and go and do some research if that's appropriate, or if they're perfectly fine with it, just move on to the next item.
Now, if somebody's going to start a business, you've got these worksheets on, you know, startup costs and sales forecasts and cash flow predictions. How can I come up with those if I haven't done any business yet? You know what I mean? That where do I start?
Well, an interesting statistic from SCORE. The SCORE is the Senior Corporate Retired Executives. They're a non-profit organization that's across America and a very good place to get help either owning a business or thinking of going into business. And SCORE says that one of the top three reasons that business fails is because they do not do a business plan. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book. I'm really big personally on doing a business plan. I like to see people do a sales and marketing plan. And I even go further. I encourage business owners to do a communication plan. What are they saying to the market about their product and service? And make sure they fine-tune that message so when they communicate it, people get what they're about. And another plan I'm big on is a productivity plan. How do you break down your day so you're always doing something productive and working towards an end goal? So, again, there's some of the things I talk about in the book, but very important to put down strong foundations. The business plan allows that, and then the sales and marketing plan, the productivity plan, and the communication plan. They're all part of that that need, and if you do those things, your chances of being successful are greatly improved.
You also have a discussion about how you formulate your business legally, right? Whether you should be a sole proprietor or an S-corp or whatever. I think most people start out as sole proprietors, and I've heard different opinions. What do you think about people staying sole proprietors?
Well, the legal entity you choose, that is the realm of an attorney. So to create a legal entity, you would consult with and have an attorney do this for you. I've explained in the book the different legal entities available, and it may be more appropriate to create an S-corporation rather than be a sole proprietor because there's tax advantages. So when you create a legal entity, there's two things you're considering. You're considering the legal consequences, but you're also considering the tax consequences, and they need to be equally weighed. So you may talk to your accountant first off to get some advice, and then he'll refer you to an attorney to create the legal entity. But, you know, it's just a function of your situation, the industry you're working in. An S-corp provides legal and tax protection that a sole proprietor doesn't have. And in some industries, that's the best way to go. So it's just a function of what industry you choose to be in and working through those variables.
So it sounds like you work with attorneys and accountants as well as business owners and prospective owners.
Yes, my world is full of different skill sets. Attorneys, accountants, I'm always dealing with landlord issues, so I need to have an attorney available to help me with a legal issue if that's appropriate. Personal financial planners. If somebody's selling and retiring and getting out of business and they sell their business for, you know, considerable sum of money, I like them to consider what they want done with that money once the sale goes through. So talking with personal financial planners and putting a plan together, again, for that situation. Yeah, I'm dealing with all different skill sets. It's one of the things I enjoy the most is the dynamics of what I'm doing, dealing with escrow companies and their legal process. It's full of different skill sets and different challenges, and that's one of the things I find attractive about what I do.
Well, it sounds like it's very active when it's active. So
yes. Once you get in a transaction, it's absorbing because you're dealing with so many variables. You've got landlords, you've got the lenders and all their demands. You have a franchisor sometimes, and you have the seller and the buyer, obviously, with their individual needs. And you've got all these dynamics going on in a transaction, and it can get very demanding at times, but that's one of the reasons for hiring a business broker that knows these processes and can take the person through the transaction, be it, you know, helping the person sell the business or buy the business. So many variables, and to have somebody available to help with all those processes just ensures success at the end of the deal, and that's what it's all about.
Now, in real estate, they have what they call buyer's agents and seller's agents, but it's really always comes out of the seller's piece that people get paid. So is it the same way with a business, or do you engage one person and that person's going to pay you?
Now, the business model for business brokering is the same as a residential real estate agent, where the broker gets a listing from the owner of the property or the owner of the business, and they become a listing agent, and then the broker can choose to advertise and market the business. But then often business brokers like myself, we have buyers that we've been working with and built relationships with. We'll approach the broker and say, we have a qualified buying agent. I represent the buyer, and then the listing agent represents the seller, and we work together and get a transaction done.
Okay. And are there a lot of business brokers? You know,
There's not many. We're required in California to have a real estate license. So the license I have is the same as a residential real estate agent. And actually, in fact, mortgage brokers are required to have the same real estate license. But in Sacramento, for example, which is where we are, I'm guessing there's probably about perhaps 30 business brokers, and there's probably, you know, 1,000 residential real estate agents. So a very much smaller proportion of business brokers compared to residential real estate agents, but that's just a function of what it is.
So in an average-sized community, one business broker is likely to know some or all of the other business brokers.
Well, it's something that I go out of my way to do. Traditionally, business brokers tend to keep to themselves, but the best thing in a community is to have two business brokers. If you have one business broker in the community, you have a problem because that one business broker controls all the transactions. So competition's good, and you have different personalities. So one of the important things that's important to me is when I'm working with a buyer or a seller is that there's got to be a level of comfort and trust. That's the number one thing that I'm looking for when I'm working with a seller or a buyer is there a trust in the relationship, because I'm dealing with an asset that's of huge importance to the seller or the buyer, and they need to feel comfortable with the role I'm playing and the advice I'm giving. So if there's a discomfort with trust, then that's not a good place for me to be, and that's my number one criteria. I need to have a trusting relationship both ways. I have to feel comfortable that the information I'm getting from the buyer or the seller is true as well, because if I think they're not telling the truth, then it's not a place I want to be. It's not healthy for either of us.
Right. So now, switching to selling, let's go to successfully selling your business. If I'm going to sell a business, how many inspections and other things do I have to deal with? Because you mentioned, you know, whether you can trust somebody. You know, is there a roof certification? Do I have to get the building inspected? You know, what if there is no building? What kind of things do I have to deal with?
So lots of variables there. It's a good question. Lots of variables. It's a case by case. It's one of the intriguing things with what I do. There is different situations, obviously, for each transaction, and no transaction each transaction is unique. But if somebody's selling a business, if there's property involved, then yes, we will need to have an inspection of the property, make sure it's up to scratch and meets code. Some businesses require a license. For example, if you have a construction business in California, the California Contractors License Board, they control the license process. So if somebody doesn't have a license and wants to buy a business that requires a license, there's a process to go through. So if you're wanting to have a restaurant, there's a need to have a health department permit. So there's all sorts of variables. If you have a dance business that want to teach people to dance, or a nightclub, you need to have a local permit to have a dance permit. So, again, each business is different, and there's so many different variables in terms of licenses and education requirements. So part of my process as a broker is to work through all that and make sure all those criteria are met.
So along those lines, you know, you mentioned, like, the Contractor State License Board. The license, in that case, doesn't transfer, right?
That's correct. It gets a technical discussion there, but in theory, the buyer of the business needs to have their own license, though they can be sponsored by the seller of the business. It gets technical in terms of how much education that the buyer has, and is that education at a level to meet the requirement for the Contractors License Board. So there's all sorts of variables in there, but yes, there is a strict requirement there for the buyer to have a license, and there are ways to work that process through.
And are there also different levels of engagement? For example, you know, you and I might go to lunch and have a chat. Now, that's not exactly breaking a deal right there, but what, you know, then at some point we want to become serious, and at some point you have to show me the numbers inside the business. Are there formal stages to that process, or is it all also very different?
Yes, there are. It's a good question. From my perspective, one of my first goals is to introduce myself and feel comfortable with the buyer or the seller, and if there's a relationship there. And then the next step is to have a confidentiality agreement signed if I'm representing the buyer. If you're the owner of a business and you choose to sell it, one of your biggest fears is a competitor finding out it's for sale, or one of your staff, one of your employees finding out it's for sale, or your landlord finds out it's for sale, or the suppliers you work with. Big fear factors involved. So if I'm representing a buyer, one of the things I stress is that they cannot disclose anything to anybody, and to reinforce that, I have them sign a non-disclosure agreement that says that any information provided to them, they keep in the strictest confidence. Obviously, they can talk to their attorney or their accountant. That's perfectly appropriate, but it's made clear that confidentiality is the number one reason that business brokers are using a transaction, because our goal is to keep things confidential.
I didn't know that there was so much secrecy involved. So But it makes sense, I guess, if I were going to start to sell a business, I may not want my employees to know it's up for sale. They might fear for their jobs.
It just depends on the business. Right now, I've got one transaction where the owner of the business, he's in his late 60s, and he's had the business for about 13 or 14 years, and he's retiring. He's done. And he's just kept stressing to me over and over again that I do not disclose anything to anybody until they sign a written confidentiality agreement. Because, as he says, if somebody comes and damages my business by taking an employee or seeing my customers, I don't have time to rebuild the business. I'm retiring. So sellers have different stress points depending on where they are. But in terms, most sellers don't want anything said to anybody because it can damage their business, and it's a huge concern.
Right. Well, obviously, if it damages the business, it reduces the value of the business right at the
Absolutely.
Point where you're trying to sell it. So.
Yes, and if the buyer chooses to disclose things outside the agreement, the buyer can be liable for those damages. So, again, I stress that to the buyer, that this confidentiality, it's to be taken seriously.
Now, there are online sites where people can go and post businesses for sale or go look to buy a business. Do you search those sites or do you hang out there at all?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, part of my role as a business broker is knowing what's going on in the market, but there's always a consistent flow of businesses. And so, yes, there are websites I use. What I encourage a buyer to do, though, if they're looking at buying a business, is the first thing is to look at themselves, look at what they enjoy doing. A lot of the buyers tend to wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go and buy a business, and so they jump on these websites and start looking. What they need to do is to look internally first. They need to put a resume together. They need to put a credit report together. They need to put a credit score together. And they need to do these things because if they find a business that makes sense, they've got to make sure their ducks are in a row. You can't make an offer on a business if your credit report's faulty. Credit reports are notoriously known to be incorrect. So before you start the process of looking to buy a business and find the ideal business and fall in love with it but can't buy it because your credit report needs to be repaired, get these things worked out before you start the process.
Oh, I see.
And then do some work to say, okay, here's my management experience. Here's my industry experience. These are the things I would like to do, and keep your business search focused so you're not looking and distracted by businesses that are outside a business that would be of interest to you.
That's an excellent point. So even as the buyer, I need to go get my stuff in order before I start looking seriously. I hadn't thought about that. So you go to Experian or whoever, and you make sure that they haven't got something that was a mistake from 8 years ago that's still on your system.
It's amazing that as a business broker, and I try and do this before we get too far in the transaction, but I can waste a bunch of time and work with a buyer and make the great offer, and then the whole thing has just been a complete waste of time because the buyer isn't qualified to buy the business for whatever reason. Let's get these things lined up before we start the process so that if you do find a business, we can continue through the process successfully rather than frustrate the seller or the lender or the landlord or whatever. There's so many deals that die because things haven't been put together correctly from day one.
So when you mentioned a resume, the buyer would put together something that's basically equivalent to saying, I understand enough about business to actually be in there to do this, and I can make a go of this. And basically, he's trying to sell the bank on his credibility.
Yes, that's exactly right. Right now, especially, the SBA lenders are very, 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 very tight with approving loans. The last 2 years, they've done some analysis, and a lot of the business failures they've found from the last few years were loans that were approved to buyers that didn't have the correct management experience. And so a resume is a critical thing. And here's a tip. What you need to do with your resume is keep it fluid, because you may have some, for example, some special skills that you may or may not want to highlight, but you need to keep your resume fluid for each business that's of interest to you. So when you talk to a lender, you write the resume in terms that it highlights the strengths you have for that particular business. And that's something that when I'm working with a buyer, I encourage them to keep that resume fluid depending on what's of interest to them. And so when they represent themselves at the lender, they can successfully represent their skill set and give the bank comfort that they've got the right skills. And also the landlord. Landlords right now are very nervous about transferring a lease if the buyer of the business doesn't have the skills to run it.
Right. Well, that makes perfect sense. So you kind of live in both of these buying and selling worlds at the same time all the time, but how many of your clients live in both worlds, or are they all either buying or selling but not doing both at the same time?
Yeah, most people are doing one thing at a time. They're either selling a business and then taking a break, or they've had a job in corporate America or had a job and they're now unemployed, and so they're looking to move into business ownership to get on with the rest of their lives. So they're always in separate camps. It's totally unusual to have a seller of a business selling and then moving straight into new business ownership. That doesn't happen. Most sellers are selling to get out and take a break and then retire, or take a break and then come back to it in a period of time.
Right. I guess I'm like you. I'm kind of a serial entrepreneur, so I've owned several businesses. And, you know, I think one of the things a business owner is always a little curious about is, what's the value of my business? You know, at the end of the day, how do I value my business, and what could I get for it? And that's got to be the hardest question, because that is also a moving target.
It's a good question. Not only is it a hard question, but it's also a function of the business and the industry they work in. One of the traps with buying, for example, a restaurant business is that the business is predominantly cash. Most people come in and pay for their meals, you know, with cash. And so, unfortunately, there's a tendency for some of that cash not to quite make it into the cash register drawer, but into the pocket of the owner. So the owner keeps the money in his pocket, and it doesn't reach his tax return. So when the buyer of the business comes to look at the business, or when I come to appraise the value of the business, the money doesn't appear anywhere. It's been spent and gone. So it reduces the value of that business. So if there is a business that has cash going through it, it tends to reduce its value and make that industry very low.
Oh, that's interesting. So have you dealt with many businesses where they get all of their payments, let's say by Visa or credit card, on the first of the month, and does that increase the value of the business because there's a lot less cash?
Well, it's unusual for a business to get, if a business has credit card transactions going through it, it'll be going through on a daily basis, so not so much, you know, accumulating to be at the first of the month, but where a business has a lot of credit card transactions, that can in fact be a detriment, because the merchant fees can be quite high and reduce the profitability of the business. So it's always good to have a balance of cash and credit card and then accounts receivables to flatten out the cash flow.
I was thinking about service business where, you know, they get prepaid, like somebody who does pest control, right? They're going to get every month, ding, 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 they just pay on credit card, it's automatic. Or even my yard guy, right? It's automatic payments, and I never think about it, neither does he.
Yep, so there again, yes, if they're a good business, if that cash is coming in on a regular basis, that's the best thing to give a comfort to the buyer of the business, that if they can see the historical, that, you know, there's X number of dollars coming in at the beginning of each month, and it's been doing the same amount of money for 3 years. And 3 years is generally what a buyer likes to see. If there's a consistent flow of cash on over a three-year period, that is what a business looks for. If it's been doing for 12 months, that's not too much security there for the buyer of the business, because they're not quite sure it's going to continue. Whereas 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, now you can really get a history of the business, and that improves the value of that business.
Now, I was just actually reading that there are certain businesses who are run by jerks, and they did this research and found out that if a business is run by a jerk, they have more loss from their employees not quite reporting all of their revenue. So do you ever get into whether or not the person that is on one side of the deal is a nice person versus a jerk, and how that might change if somebody else owned that business?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Definitely personality is a huge thing, because when somebody's buying a business, one of the things they're paying for, the bulk of what they're paying for, can be goodwill. And goodwill is the reputation of the business. So if an astute buyer has a perception that the current owner of the business has got a grumpy personality or is difficult to deal with, they can see great potential in replacing that current owner and taking the business to a new level. It was something that I actually did with one of the businesses I bought. It was a business in a small country town, and it had an absentee owner. And that was very attractive to me, because I knew by definition absentee owners, the staff are running the business, and the staff aren't as motivated as the person who runs the business. So some of my business acquisitions have been revolved around, is there an absentee owner, or is the owner retiring? Because as an owner gets older, they lose enthusiasm and they don't work as hard as a new person would work, or a younger person would work. So somebody that's retiring or an absentee owner, they're very attractive business system, and I encourage buyers to look for those opportunities, because they have a good upside.
Ah, very good point. So what about, you know, then the other side of what I was discussing is the fear that if I'm going to buy a business and you're the key man, and now you're gone and I'm there, how many clients are just going to walk away? And I know that depends on the business, but, I mean, that's the big fear. How do you address that?
Well, that is definitely a big fear, and a good example of that is in the technology industry, where you have some real specialized skill sets in technology, and the buyer of the business has to know they have the skill set to match the current owner. Otherwise, if they're not sure about it, it can be a difficult thing to sell that business because the buyer says, I don't have that skill set of that owner, and therefore I take the risk of buying the business and losing customers and therefore, you know, damaging my profitability in the business. So, yes, that's a real concern to professional businesses that have a high skill set.
And is there any kind of insurance along those lines that...
No insurance there. It's just called business risk. It's just managing the risk. And, again, if you look at that situation, it may be impossible to get financed because the lender says, I don't feel comfortable financing this business because the buyer doesn't have the skill set that the seller has. And so what may have to evolve here is the seller has to assess the buyer and says, okay, well, I'll be the bank and you bring me a decent down payment and I'll finance the balance of the transaction. And then the seller does that in the knowledge that if the buyer falls away and can't keep the business going, the business then goes back to the seller and he comes back into business and picks things up and continues on.
With a broken heart.
Possibly. I mean, some sellers are quite comfortable taking that risk because they, you know, take a two-year break, and if the business isn't doing well in 2 years and the buyer needs to get out, they can go back in and have a two-year break, and in that two-year period, the buyer's been working hard to try and make it successful, but the seller comes back in, replaces the inexperienced buyer, and gets his customers back again and continues on and does very well from the whole transaction.
Oh, well, good. So it just sounds like, man, it would be so hard to go through all that and then have to go back to the business that you were hoping to get rid of.
Yeah, just an individual thing, as it's worth saying. The work I do is intriguing because no two situations are the same. And, you know, a retiring seller, he doesn't want to see the business ever again. He's done. So it just depends on the situation.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. I used to have a client who had, he was a business coach, and he had his computer servers in his office. And so I would go to work on the computer, and I would overhear him having conversations with people, and he was an accountant by trade. So it occurred to me after a while that he really understood a level of his clients' businesses that they did not understand. And I suspect that you're the same way, that you probably, if I gave you three or four key numbers, you would know more about my business than I do about certain things, because there are key factors that you focus on in order to figure out, you know, what a business is worth and whether it's going up and down or sideways and all of that. You know, it just kind of strikes me that that's the case, and I don't know if that's true with all business brokers, but...
Well, it's an astute question, because if I'm talking, for example, to somebody, to an owner of a business that has a food business, my magic number is $500,000. If he has $500,000 in sales and growing, that's a positive business. If he's got $500,000 or less and declining, that business may be in trouble. And so that's one of my easy tests, is to say to the owners, oh, how are your sales doing? What's your gross sales for the last 12 months? And once they give me that number, it gives me a lot more information than they suspect that I may know.
Right. Well, it makes perfect sense. And when you help someone buy a business, do you help them research, or do they do most of the research and just come to you and say, what do you think of this, what do you think of that?
The process I use, it's a consultative process, and it really is just a matter of each buyer and their process. But what I like to do is have an initial meeting so that, you know, they're comfortable with who I am and my skill set, and then I'll come back and have a second meeting. And what I'd like to do is to meet their partner, their spouse. If they're married, I'd like to meet the husband and wife or whatever the arrangement is, and just make sure that everyone in the transaction is on the same page. Because it can be that, you know, some husbands or some wives are very determined that these are certain things that have to be made. Unless I hear that and get the transaction and find out that later on that hasn't been considered, there's been a waste of time. So it's for me to make sure that the husband and wife are on the same page with what we're doing. And then once I get that clarity, and then we start exploring industries, skill sets, and those sorts of things. And then I encourage the main buyer of the business to do their own research, because buying a business is very much a personal situation. But I will, you know, stay in contact with them at least weekly, if not more. I'm ready to get feedback, and I have my series of questions that I ask to test them and make sure they're considering certain things. And if they have things that are on their mind, it gives them a chance to have a conversation with me and clarify things. So it's very consultative, very hands-on, because there's so many variables involved.
And when you help somebody make this deal, how long do you stay involved? I mean, do I sign the papers and never see you again, or what's the norm after that?
Yeah, the norm is that most of the people, if they're buying an existing business, for example, there's training provided by the seller. So as a business broker, once the transaction closes, my role is pretty much done, because there's training and anything ongoing will be taken care of by the seller, or if they're buying a franchise, the franchisor provides the training and the sales and marketing and those things. And so my role is just limited really to get the person into the transaction, close the transaction, and do all the work in between. And then once the transaction closes, they've got their people, their skill sets, their attorney, their accountant, whatever they need to work with, and they follow that process.
With franchises, you know, the big promise of franchises from Michael Gerber and everybody else is that there's somebody whose job is to work on the business, so I can just go to work in the business. And I don't have to worry about the color scheme or how things are shipped or what the marketing looks like or what the message of the day is. Somebody else is handling that. Are there franchises that sell better than other franchises, or are they pretty much all the same? They're all guaranteed to be successful.
Well, the franchise business model is controlled by the Federal Trade Commission. So the franchise model is, it's an investment for the buyer. They're actually making an investment. That's how the Federal Trade Commission sees the franchise buyer. So there's a document called the franchise disclosure document that's given to a buyer during a certain part in the transaction. And that certain part is that they need to make sure that the franchisee has the ability to buy the business and got the capital available and got some skill sets. So there's some qualifying things that a franchisor does. And once they feel comfortable with that, they then disclose the FDD, or the franchise disclosure document, so the franchise buyer can do their research. And one of the great things about buying a franchise is that by law you're allowed to talk to other franchisees in the business model. So if you're buying a franchise here, for example, in Sacramento, you can talk to a franchisee in Florida or New York or Texas, or in Southern California. And that's a great thing, because you get to talk to people that are actually working in the franchise, and you can get a lot of information from doing that. So that is a great advantage over buying an existing business, where if you buy an existing business for somebody that's got a business here in Sacramento, there's nobody else you can talk to. You can go and talk to competitors, but you can't disclose that you're buying the business, because you have this non-disclosure agreement. So again, this is just different processes for different business models. And that's why different people choose different business models for their own personal reasons.
Right. Well, plus, I mean, I know in my business, one of my businesses is technical consulting. You could go talk to another technical consultant, but it might tell you absolutely nothing about how I run my business or what my model is or anything. Where with a franchise, you know, obviously, if you got the same franchise with the same name, it will tell you quite a bit about how they operate.
That's right, yeah, and that's one of the things that you're buying as the franchise buyer. You're really buying an operating system. You're really buying a model that's been proven and being tweaked, and so that your role is to bring your personal energy and experience into that model and then follow the instructions and follow the processes that have been developed, because they've been proven to be successful, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel. And that's the reason why franchises are particularly attractive to people in corporate America, because they've got very specialized skills that they've developed from working in corporate America, and they can transplant those skills into a franchise model and feel very comfortable with it. So there's, you know, there's another set of criteria that's attractive to certain people.
Have you been in this business long enough to have somebody that came and did a transaction with you and then maybe 5 or 10 years later said, hey, you know what, I'm going to change businesses and, you know, help me buy the next one?
I haven't done it personally, but yes, you know, most business buyers, they hold their business for a minimum of 5 years, and then once they get comfortable with, you know, things get boring after 5 years and they start getting restless and either wanting to buy more of the same business or sell out and move to the next level. But with the economy being as difficult as it's been the last 12 months, that's put those plans on hold for a lot of people, and that's part of what we're waiting for the economy to heal, so those people start appearing again and jumpstart the economic process.
Right. And do you know if when people buy a franchise, how likely they are to go buy a second franchise of the same kind? maybe in a different
location?
Well,
some franchise models, and that's in fact the franchise model. For example, the hairstyling, there's a great clips and bought clips. They're actually built around a business model where the franchisee buys the territory for 4 or 5 locations, and rather than the franchisee being the person that cuts your hair, he hires hair salonists to do that work. But he has 4 or 5 salons that bring in a total income that is what he's looking for. So there are different business models within the franchise model. You have masters, regional developers, and then unit developers. And a master can be a person that owns a geographic area like all of Northern California, and then they build out their territory by interviewing and bringing on board individual franchisees. So there's different business models in that franchise model.
All righty. Well, I did not know that. So the world of things I don't know expands every day. So So when you start out with, you've got 6 of these things going now, right? So when you start out, is there anything that you fear the most where you say, gosh, I just hope this doesn't turn into one of these situations?
Well, the biggest fear you have is all I have to sell as a business broker is my time. So it's just the frustration of what I'm doing. It's, you know, last year I spent 200 hours with one buyer trying to buy a business. And we started in March 2008, and July we made an offer on a business, and it was a great business, looking really good. August came along, and the economy started to teeter, and then September hit, and the bank stopped lending. And so that work I'd done for that client since March all disappeared because we couldn't get finance to close the transaction. So that's just part of my world as a business broker.
And of people who engage you on either side of the aisle, what percentage either back out or just fail to turn into a transaction?
That's an interesting question, and it's probably it's a fact that there are some people that choose to sell their business on their own. An escrow company that I work with said to me that for every transaction that's done between a seller and a buyer with no business broker, there is a 5 out of 6 chance that deal will collapse because either side or both parties in the transaction aren't experienced enough of what they do. So having a business broker is a critical thing because we do have the training and the experience to close the knowledge gaps and the trust gap and the execution gaps that a normal seller and a buyer don't normally have. So bringing a business broker in is a good step to take.
Right. Well, getting back to the books, these books are they're less than $30 a piece, and each one of these books looks like it would save me, an easy 40 or 50 hours worth of my time trying to figure out how to buy or sell or start a business. And so, I think that you've done a spectacular job putting together a product that heads me in the right direction. But having said that, I wouldn't ever consider selling a business without a broker. I couldn't even imagine it. I have enough headaches.
I really wrote the books with the intention to trying to help the seller or the buyer have as much knowledge as they can. There's so many variables in a transaction, so I thought the better educated the seller or the buyer is in the transaction, when they're talking to a broker, it will reduce the hours of conversation and questions and frustrations that everyone can experience. Because there's information in those books that really helps that process. I had a buyer of one of the books of the day talk to me, and the books are being sold for $29.95, and he said the book was just dirt cheap, and he was so grateful because it gave him so much background, and I'm currently working with him now to look at buying a business or a franchise, but he said there was great value in those books because it helped him. He's a 58-year-old CPA, so a very experienced businessman with a contractor's license and all sorts of things, and he was pulling information from those books that he said was great, and I'm now working with him, consulting with him to find a business for him and his wife. So it's been a good process for him.
Very nice. Now, most of the people who are out there listening to this are not in California, they're not in Sacramento, and some of them aren't inside the United States. So obviously we would encourage them to go find an appropriate business broker for them. How do they do that? How do you get started finding a good business broker?
Well, the first thing to do is to buy the book so that you can build your knowledge. So that's
absolutely
a good place to start. And then once you've done that and decided that business ownership is where you'd like to be, there is an organization I belong to called the International Business Brokers Association, and they have a website called IBBA.org, www.ibba.org, and they have all the associations globally that represent business brokers, and you can drill down and find the individual members. And so if you're in Australia or UK or Greece, there are business brokering associations in each of those countries, and you can find members that belong to those associations. And it's something I would encourage you to do. I would encourage you to work with a business broker that belongs to one of the associations, because there are a lot of business brokers that aren't affiliated, and they don't have the training. Whereas if they belong to the IBBA or one of the affiliate associations, they've got some training and experience behind them, and that's something that's important for you that you need as you go through this process.
And assuming that I've got two or three in my little town, how do I pick a broker? I mean, do I interview them? Do I just...
It's as simple as that. Again, I talked about it before, that the trust is the most important ingredient in the transaction. So you need to work with a business broker that you feel the most comfortable with. And once you have that relationship in place, the rest should... There's many more things to go through, but the trust is the number one thing you want in the relationship. And if you don't feel comfortable with that, look around for a business broker that provides that for you, even if it means that business broker is a little bit further away to travel to. You know, the trust is a critical thing.
All righty. Well, obviously, all of these books are for sale at successfullybuyyourbusiness.com. But let me also let you give your website. You've got your own individual website as the author.
So I have my own website. It's my name. It's www.andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W, hyphen, Rogerson, R-O-G-E-R-S-O-N. So it's www.andrew-rogerson.com. Or if you just do a Google search for my name, Andrew Rogerson, just do a Google, and there's not too many in the world, and hopefully my name will come up on the first page of your Google search.
I sure hope so. So the books are Successfully Buy Your Business, Successfully Sell Your Business, Successfully Start Your Business, and Successfully Buy Your Franchise, all of them by Andrew Rogerson. And I really appreciate your time. This has been very, very informative, and I really wish you tremendous success with your books.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you.
All righty. Thank you.
This audio program is copyrighted by Great Little Book Publishing Company, Incorporated, and may not be redistributed or reproduced in any format whatsoever without express written permission.